Welcome, friends. Welcome back to the Asia-Pacific Perspective. I'm one half of your dynamic duo, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. And for those who don't remember, because it has been a very long time since we last had an AP update, this is the monthly podcast series where we take you on a tour of the Asia-Pacific region for all the news that is fit or unfit to print. And in our absence over the last few months, there have been a lot of stories bubbling, including the explosions in Tianjin and elsewhere in China, and the North Korean-South Korean military rivalry always bubbling up, the security bills that have passed in Japan threatening to rewrite the Constitution, or reinterpret the Constitution anyways, and make Japan more militaristic. Lots of things happening, but here we are in mid-October of 2015, so we'll cover the things that are bubbling up under the surface right now. And in order to do that, we are joined, as always, by our good friend Brock West of APPerspective.net. Brock, how are things for you today in the beautiful Sunshine Coast?
Very, very nice, as always. I wish our audience could see the view I have and where I live. Every day I do wake up, and I'm truly grateful to be here and on the beautiful sunny coast. It's great, and yeah, boy, I feel we're a bit rusty, James, but I'm sure we'll plow ahead and get through this. And we've got some very, very important and big stories to cover this month or this bi-month, whatever.
This quarter, yeah.
This quarter, exactly. Yeah. Whenever we decide to do it, we'll do it. But hopefully, we'll get back to a more regular schedule as we move towards the end of the year. So yeah, let's get right into it. We'll take our first story from Russia today with the headline reading, "Will China join forces against the TPP?" Now, obviously, unless you've been living under a rock or on Mars with Matt Damon, the TPP is the biggest story that we've been speaking about for many, many years here. And in fact, was one of the catalyzing events that I saw looming on the horizon for the Asia Pacific that, got me to basically start the website. Taking this from Russia today, "The newly signed controversial Trans-Pacific Partnership sounds like a big win for the US and its allies, but leaving out China. This snub may leave Beijing with no other option but to form its own bloc with other countries that have been left out. It's unlikely that China was not invited to join the TPP by mistake. When more than 95% of our potential customers live outside our borders, we can't let countries like China write the rules of the global economy," said Barack Obama in a statement, because, of course, only the US can control the global economy. Moving on, the former director of the South American trade bloc, Mikosu Quijano, and I apologize if I'm butchering that, was quoted to say, "The main victim is China, because in order to sell to other TPP members, the country needs to have created goods with its raw material or input. The countries will therefore not buy raw materials from China, and they would want to sell the goods to the US and other countries," he said. "It is clear that the aim is to generate trade diversion towards those who are members and to remove China, which is not a member of the TPP," Quijano added. "This raises questions whether China and other countries are ready to unite to counterbalance this Pacific Rim Pact." Now, James, despite the political rhetoric, I don't buy the narrative that this is a total exclusion of China and the TPP is a trade pact that is just there to contain China in that sense. China is still the world's biggest manufacturer and exporter, and most likely will be for some time. Earlier in the year, as we spoke about in a previous episode, with the help of the IMF, they established the AIIB, and ever since then, the renminbi has been steadily transforming itself into the new global currency. And as we reported in one of the most recent GRT videos, we know that the multinational corporate interests of both the US and China have been in bed together at least since the Deng Xiaoping era 4 decades ago. So for me, surely it's in the best interests of the globalists to have China at the TPP table. Or is this perhaps China hedging its bets on BRICS, the AIIB, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and also its new Silk Road project, which I will add has just had Hungary sign up onto? So yeah, I mean, it's very interesting to see what's going to be happening there. James, what's your thoughts?
Interesting indeed. And I think you're right. I mean, I think there's two ways, obviously, of looking at this. From the 2D perspective, I wouldn't say that the encircling or the diversion from China was the immediate proximate cause of the coming together of this deal. But I think it was certainly at least in the back of everyone's minds who was there at the table. There are obviously Chinese rivals, economic and other rivals in that region, that are interested in getting some sort of leg up in economic terms with the U.S., obviously, a major trading partner, and other trading partners in the region. So that's part of why this deal came together. And that's obviously from the 2D perspective of, you know, the U.S.-China rivalry and all of that. From the 3D perspective, I think you're right. Ultimately, who ends up benefiting from all of these different trade blocks, trade deals, all of these things that are happening is the same corporatocracy. And yes, they are all connected in the top in various different ways. And I think that's exactly the Chinese sort of fight back against this is the AIIB or the New Silk Road project. They've pumped tens of billions of dollars of that into the New Silk Road just this year alone, let alone over the lifetime of this project. The BRICS, of course, and all of these other institutions that are being created as the kind of counterbalance to the TPP and things that are going on. But of course, it ultimately just serves to further get these countries into regional agreements and binding pacts that, of course, just tend to lead inevitably towards regional government, eventually global government. I think these are just stepping stones, and it provides the perfect foil and the perfect excuse for that to happen. Now, say what you will about all of this, but at any rate, you can say at least China, with all of its credit-fueled, you know, funny money that it's been using for the last several years to keep itself afloat, at least it's creating actual hardwired infrastructure, railways and pipelines and other things in across Central Asia, into West Asia, South Asia, into Europe. I mean, that's hugely important, and it will, that infrastructure will survive whatever credit crunch collapse is coming for the Chinese, whereas look at the U.S. and the Federal Reserve just basically buying toxic financial derivative assets off of the banks, and the banks, of course, using that to park in their Federal Reserve accounts. So there's quite a difference in the way that that's being done, and the Chinese are using a better strategy. But of course, as I say, it's ultimately tending towards the same goal.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if we look at what has happened with the United States economy and how that has gone down, I mean, essentially they're a military-run economy, and once that credit crunch happens with China, I imagine there's going to be an even more of a bigger shift and a ratcheting up of China's not only the military but the way that, I mean, the foundation that their economy is run on via their military. James, just in some other interesting developments regarding the TPP or trade deals, at least. What I believe was the biggest trade deal ever between China and Australia was just signed recently, which is kind of interesting considering the TPP was in the final stages and now has been signed. So it's interesting in that way that, you know, just despite China being snubbed out of the TPP, they're still able to go around and sign these massive resource trade deals with America's and the West, well, one of America's biggest allies here in Australia. And just over the pond there in New Zealand, there's a headline reading, "Court rules government unlawfully withheld secret TPP documents," which is kind of a no-brainer. And yeah, as you pointed out before, James, whether it's TTP, TTIP, ASEAN, BRICS, the Silk Road, it's always great news for the corporatocracy and bad news for the rest of us. We'll leave the TPP there, as there's a lot more to be said, and of course there will be some more related show notes for people to go and do their own research and look into further. Moving on to our second story, James, and we will focus here on the sunny climes of Eastern Australia with a new data retention laws that have just come into place. And we'll take this one from sbs.com.au with the headline reading, "Controversial Australian Data Retention Laws Unlikely to Prevent Crime." Phone and internet companies are now required by law to store customers' data for 2 years, and some experts say the laws are over the top, expensive, and unlikely to prevent crime. Controversial new laws that force internet service providers and telecommunications carriers to retain customer metadata for at least 2 years came into effect just this past Tuesday. The laws, which passed both houses of parliament earlier in the year, are part of a series of federal government national security measures. This includes incoming and outgoing caller identification, as well as durations, times, and dates of calls. Assistant Professor of Law at the University of Canberra, Professor Bruce Bayer-Arnold, specialises in privacy and service and surveillance law. He said that while the content of the communications will not be stored, authorities will have access to a range of other personal information. The police, ASIO, and a range of other agencies will have warrantless access to basically intimate information to who you're calling, where you're calling from, and who you're calling to, Assistant Professor Arnold said. They won't have access to the content of that information yet, but they will be able to come up with a fairly good idea of what you're talking about. Professor Arnold argued that the law could help catch a criminal act after the fact, but is unlikely to prevent or predict crime. Quote, "It won't catch the so-called lone wolf terrorists, and it won't catch the people who act on their own. It may have some use retrospectively on a forensic basis, But in terms of prediction and in terms of prevention, almost certainly no. James, as in the same vein as the TPP, and from what we know from the leaked drafts of the TPP, it's going to play a vital role in data collection in regards to copyright infringement and data and metadata collection as well. But saying that, this is sadly another case of problem, reaction, solution, I think. Australia has played a significant role in the destabilization of the Middle East, which in turn has created the perfect environment for the rise of terrorist organizations, which our closest ally has been funding, training, and equipping, but I digress. And a fearful and an apathetic Australian public has allowed the government surveillance dragnet to be established with little more than a whimper, unfortunately. As this article pointed out, it's not about protecting the community or stopping the terrorist boogeyman, and it never has been. It's about furthering the surveillance state agenda that has been going on ever since that narrative was established after 9/11. So on a positive note, the only thing I can suggest is to check out a Gizmodo article that I've got posted to apperspective.net, how to get around Australia's data retention scheme, which goes into ways that we can at least try to circumnavigate the dragnet by using VPNs and encryption and a whole list of other things. So I would definitely encourage people to check that out. Just to hopefully at least make it a little more difficult for the spooks to in the intelligence community to suck up all of your data.
And let's not forget the other side of that, because there are actual genuine hackers and non-government groups out there as well. So encryption and things like that are also useful for that. But yes, I mean, this is really just the formalization, the putting in law of things that are already being done in practice, as we already know, of course, with the NSA and what have you, already scooping up all your data. Well, now they're just making it easier to formally cement that in law with the ISPs and what have you having to retain this data for a longer period of time. And whatever happens in any of the Commonwealth countries, any of the Five Eyes countries, is going to happen in the others. So I think Australia is just kind of leading this particular race, and that's not a good thing. But at any rate, you're the canary in the coal mines for how this is implemented and how it will be received by the public. So again, this is, I mean, it's all part of, I think this is really more part of the rolling out of the public version of the, or part of this PSYOP. So it's how will the public respond to it, and what, you know, will the people just sort of roll over and take it? And well, if anything, if the past is anything to go by, they probably will, but let's not be too pessimistic about it before we see what actually occurs. And to my Australian brothers and sisters, you know, you're taking one for the team this time, and I'm sure the Five Eyes will ultimately start to implement this in all the other countries pretty soon.
Yeah, I was going to say that I'm sure it won't be long before this... A similar sort of surveillance dragnet is rolled out in Japan there, and also further around the Asia Pacific region. So it's just, also that hacking, I mean, the fact that, you know, hacking has been so prevalent from obviously like lone wolf hackers, and also obviously government hackers as well. We've seen obviously the Sony hack and all these kind of things that have been used to ratchet up further tensions between North Korea and stuff. So who knows, for some, you know, easily some kind of false flag. Oh, you know, ISIS has hacked ASIO, and all of your data is all of a sudden in the hands of the terrorists. So, and there was another thing that kind of I've been thinking about recently with the work that we've been doing over the last few months. You know, my search history and some of the research that we do doesn't look that great in terms of if you're a government spook looking for terrorists. You know, we've got looking for ISIS and 9/11 and Pentagon and all these kind of things. So it's really, I'm incredibly concerned, and I'm absolutely going to be doing everything I can to at least try and circumnavigate it. I think it's naive to think that you're 100% safe from this kind of huge nationwide surveillance dragnet, but you can only do what you can, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think the real point here is that, of course, these laws and the ability to look through your search history and whatever is just as good as the sort of consistency of enforcement of something like this. And of course, if they, you know, want to try to pin something on you, then suddenly your search history becomes fair game. But if they don't want, or if you're an untouchable golden boy, and then, you know, it doesn't matter because they won't enforce it. So it's always a question of enforcement. And as always, the cronies and insiders will never get hassled by this type of thing. It's only the political dissidents that will actually get hassled by this.
Yeah, you can only imagine what a political cronies browser history might look like. But anyway, we'll leave that there. So, James, those are two fairly massive stories, and I will wholeheartedly encourage the viewers to look into that and learn more. And as always, we always encourage you to check out the Relateds and continue there to do your own research. Just quickly for our third segment, James, I'll run through some other developments that have been happening here in the Asia-Pacific recently. And first up, we're going to start in South Korea with the South Korean president sinks fresh momentum on Pyongyang-Washington alliance. And moving on, Seoul to create a special unit to attack North Korea nuke and missile assets. Moving further south down to Thailand, Thailand's criminal court issues an arrest warrant for fugitive former PM Thaksin. A new explosion hits China's chemical warehouse in Tianjin City after that massive, massive explosion a few months ago. And finally, from our good friend Noel Bowie there in Malaysia, as scandal mounts, Largess keeps Malaysia's PM in power. And in that article, he goes into the continuing 1MDB corruption scandal happening there in Malaysia. Niall's always doing great work there. And I wholeheartedly encourage everyone to check out his work. And just before I throw it back to you, James, APPerspective.net wants you. Due to my ever increasing commitments to CorbettReport.com, I'm not able to physically update the site as much as I would like. And as we've reported here today, there's so much happening. So I'm putting the word out there for someone to put their hand up and who wants to be a part of the alt media. Obviously, it would be the only prerequisite is that you have a genuine interest in Asia-Pacific generally. And apart from that, I'm happy to teach you anything else, everything I know, everything I've learned. So if that sounds like something you may be interested in, get in touch with me on Twitter at Brock West or at AP_perspective or via email, brockwest@hushmail.com. James.
Yes, and speaking of Twitter contributions, we should thank at Miles of Truth for pointing us in the direction of a story about the United States reported to deploy warships in South China Sea, which I think is another important part of that ratcheting up of military tensions that we've been documenting here time after time on the AP Perspective. So thanks to at Miles of Truth for pointing us in that direction. And of course, anyone who wants to can get into this by tweeting with the hashtag AP Perspective, and we will pick up on those stories. So, yes. Excellent. Well, let's wrap it up there, and hopefully it will not be another half year before the next edition of this series. Brock West, thank you again for your time.
That's hope not, mate. I'm looking forward to the next one. Thank you.